Hello and welcome to the Soccer Speakeasy.
Do you like the way I said that?
Mm-hmm.
Today is Wednesday, the 21st of March, and it's just afternoon. The young men were late getting in today. I just wanted to mention that. But the Podfather was here pretty much on time before he started playing bad music. Rachel Kilroy is here. We're on the Facebook Live, so welcome everyone in the ether. Hopefully we're not getting our data scraped too deeply. Kyle Robertson's here on the left, Ohio's most decorated sports photographer. And, of course, our crew beat writer, Andrew Erickson, is here. Austin expert now. I think he's going to write a travel guide of some sort, or how to navigate the government of the Texas State Capitol. I'm Mike Arace, the moderator of this otherwise fine program. First, let's talk a little soccer before we get to political football. Can you say political football?
Yeah, that'd
be fine. Like the kids say with the soccer?
That's fine. You can say soccer or football. It's either way. It's
all Kyle, good. Questions, comments? He's not the best for nothing.
Happy birthday to him, by the way.
That's right. Kyle today is 47 years old.
Yep. Doesn't look a day over 50.
He's holding up well.
Looking good.
No, he's 35, and he has his second child due any moment.
Yep.
Well, his wife has the second child due any moment. We'll have to go to the DNA lab to establish paternity, but in any case.
What position do you think? Right wing?
I think he's going to be a lefty again.
Okay.
Lefties. Keegan's a lefty, so hopefully Camden's a lefty. So.
You know, talking to the crew on the field, you can start right off with the standings. New York City FC is at the top of the Eastern ladder. That's what they say that inside, ladder.
Table.
On the table. They say ladder too, though.
Okay.
I'm older than you.
All right. Like this. Yeah.
At the top of the table, NYCFC, 3-0, 9 points. Second place, Columbus, 2-0-1, 7 points. Third, Atlanta, which is the current greatest team ever assembled after Seattle. They're 2-1-0 with 6 points.
Yeah, they're very good. Very good at home.
Toronto took a long time to achieve Yankees type greatness, but Atlanta just was born that way, I guess.
When you have
the league loves them.
When you have Barco and Almiron on your roster, it's going to be tough to be bad.
But anyway, 9-7-6 points. New York City FC, Columbus, Atlanta, and then there's a little cliff there. Philadelphia 1-0-1, 4 points. Red Bulls 1-1-0, 3 points. Montreal 3 points. New England 3 points. So 9-7-6. And the Columbus crew, SC for Columbus, with the 7 points in there. And then it's 4-3-3-3. And, you know, given the some of the starts the crew has had, Kyle, I'm throwing this your way. In recent seasons, what does their very good start, which included a nil-all draw on the road in Philadelphia last Saturday, what does this portend? This is good news if you're a crew fan.
Yeah, I think if you're one of looking at the beginning of the season and you look at your first three games, you probably want to go 2-3, you know, have, you know, 6 points, but to have 7 in the first three, I think they're doing pretty good.
Plus,
you know,
it breaks their form.
Right.
Under Berhalter, generally speaking.
But yeah, I think you're thrilled being, you know, you don't want to start 0-3, but, you know, to have 7 points, but, you know, they could have had 9 and, you know, been a little bit better, but I mean, I think they'd be pretty thrilled to be sitting where they are at 7.
They got to be happy. Andrew, Kyle was in Cleveland for the wrestling on Saturday. I was commuting from St. John Arena to Nationwide on Saturday and didn't see much of the game at all. You did and wrote about it.
You didn't miss much. I mean, it was an ugly game. Let's just be, I think there were like 1.4 expected goals combined between both teams, which is very low. I think the crew had a better chance to score on a couple one-on-one plays with Jossy Zardes. There was one play where Alejandro Bedoya on Philly was dispossessed by Artur in the box. But other than that, there weren't a whole lot of dangerous chances. I don't think Zach Steffen was ever sweating that he was going to allow a goal there. You know, the comment made earlier in the week was that Philadelphia midfielder Harris Madunian said, you know, we're going to high press them. With all due respect, they're no Barcelona. And the comment I made after the game was, I don't think either team is Barcelona, so I don't think we have to worry about that. So yeah, I mean, I you know, I think the overarching theme of that, though, is we didn't hear the term winning ugly or getting a result ugly with respect to the crew until maybe July, August, September of last year. If you can get results like that early in the season where you kind of grind it out, they traditionally have not played well in Philly. I was there last summer when they lost 3-0 there. So to be able to get that result, even if you didn't play the way you wanted to and sustain something, I think is a good sign, because last year I don't think they had a road tie until July against Real Salt Lake. So that's I think a good sign for this team, but, you know, not a great performance in general.
Well, Kyle, you're a professional photographer, and most not that you're not flexible or cover all sorts of territory in your field, but you're a renowned sports photographer, and you saw pictures of that stadium, and I think you'd estimate there are about 137,000 fans in the Philadelphia Stadium on Saturday for that
more.
Game.
Yeah, plus or minus more. A few.
Yeah. I think we've kind of touched on this a little bit here on this podcast. I think they're in trouble too. So, with their fans, I mean, you know, you, Andrew, would probably give a better guess, but I mean, you know, there probably wasn't more than 10,000 fans there, probably, right?
There wasn't.
I mean,
I was off by 132,000. Andrew, what did you think was in
there? I mean, I don't think there were. I think Jonathan Tannenwald, who covers the team for the Philadelphia Inquirer, pointed it out well. They announced there were 15,000 right. people. They did not all show up to that game. So I think that's fair to say, at the very least.
And we get into the dirtiness of the league here. And look, if that was tickets sold, fine. If that's what they want to announce. But here in Columbus, it all feels so hollow because, for instance, at the playoff game here, when they basically forced a third of the crowd to remain in the parking lot to kick off, and then all of a sudden said, yeah, this is how we're doing attendance today. It's turnstile count at kickoff. And there's thousands of people stuck in the parking lot. And, one of the ironies here is for their own home opener here, the Crew, I thought the 11,000 was fairly accurate.
Yeah, I made the comment to you, the attendance figure for the Crew this year might be the most honest attendance figure you've ever had. But the problem is you place that in the scope of a league that has traditionally inflated it. And I'm not saying this is not specific to MLS, but leagues do that. They give away comps. They, you know, group sales and people don't show up. But I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of floating that number upward this year with the Crew. And I think that's fair to say.
But given the circumstances here, it's sort of tough to take. You know, if that crowd was in Philadelphia on Saturday, the same crowd the Crew had here for their home opener,
right,
they would have announced 137,312, you know?
It's like Camp Nou there. It was great.
Boy, he's good. Now, coming up at DC United, you know, someone asked a question about DC United from via Twitter or the Crew Facebook, our Facebook Crew fan page, and it had to do with thoughts and insights into what's going on with DC United and their supporters groups. And like that one,
I don't know
the reference to that, so I apologize. I even tried Googling it just a couple minutes ago, and I got nothing. It's the first I've heard.
I would say, and with all due respect to Keith, who we respect a lot, there's enough to
was
cover.
Was that a Keith question?
I think it was. Or no, maybe somebody else.
No, that was someone else.
All right, it was somebody else. Yeah. But with all due respect on that, we have so much to cover with this team that it's hard to keep track of, you know, the goings on with other teams in that respect. So
yeah, one team, two cities.
Yeah.
Coming up, the Crew is home against DC United. It'll be their second home game of the season, Saturday at 6 p.m. at the Mapfre Stadium. And Andrew, there'll be some necessary lineup changes.
Yes, Will Trapp and Zach Steffen were both called into national team camp in North Carolina for their friendly against Paraguay next Tuesday, or Tuesday now. That's the Tuesday coming up, and they will be out of the lineup. First time since the start of the 2017 season that these guys won't be in the starting lineup. Trapp played, I think, all but 25 minutes last year, and Steffen played every minute of every game. So I think you'll get a look at John Kempen, who they got from the LA Galaxy in the offseason, has been an 8-year backup in the league, and is 24 but has 8 years of league experience, and I think is a sturdy backup and somebody they can throw in a spot. And then you'll probably see one of Muhammad Abu or Ricardo Clark. I would think Clark, but it's hard to say with Artur in the lineup, and so some changes there. But DC will be without a few guys as well who were called up to their respective national teams.
Now, Kyle, you were a striker, correct?
Yes.
So you know nothing about seeing the field or having any touch.
Just feed me the ball.
Feed me, hold that, yeah.
But this does change their midfield. Will Trapp is elemental to linking the back end to the midfield and then forward to glory. So your thoughts? He's a tough guy to replace. I mean, Steffen is a burgeoning star, but Will Trapp has been a rock here and a deserved call up.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what they do and how the team kind of shifts, how it attacks, you know, without going through Trapp. So it'll be interesting to see, if they'll keep the person in the midfield like Clark, you know, as back as, you know, Trapp usually kind of sits, or if he's going to be more pushed up, or you know what they're going to do you know, like we've said lots of times, you know, this team's very deep, you know, and this is just another opportunity for a couple guys to, you know, get some minutes and just see how, you know, you never know who's going to get hurt or, you know, their play's going to fall off. So I think it's good that we have a couple, you know, new guys in that kind of will see the field and, you know, get some minutes throughout the season.
Now, on the same subject, Andrew, you featured today in Ohio's greatest home newspaper on page, well, you got buried here, C9, a piece on Artur, the young Brazilian midfielder who plays in tandem with Trapp, and he looms as a more important figure potentially on Saturday.
Correct, and the part I wrote about in that feature and the part I tried to emphasize was that last year when he was on the field, he was one of the most dynamic players on the team. His ground cover is incredible. I think the anecdote I always remember is they played, might have been Akron, in a scrimmage early in the season when he wasn't yet in the starting lineup, and this guy gets the ball near the corner, and Artur from near midfield just runs straight at the guy, and the guy panics and kicks it in the woods. I'm like, oh, this guy's pretty good. And I think he showed that
kicked it in the woods?
The guy on, I think it was Akron, just kicked it into the woods in Obetz. He just like panicked.
Oh.
Yeah. And so I knew his ground cover was good seeing it in person. You know, I say that to say basically when he was on the field last year, he was very impactful. He had a couple injuries. He had a calf injury, broke his wrist, obviously, had a little bit of a hamstring and only started 19 games. And you saw this year, he has noticeably more muscle tone. I think his arms are bigger. He's stronger in his legs. And so if he's able to stay durable throughout the course of the season, that's, I think, a huge piece, especially because you have Trapp, who's proved his durability as late as last year.
Good on Will and Zach Steffen. I mean, it's time, it's time, Kyle, for the national team. And I started to do it a little bit last year, but it's time for some new blood to be injected on the men's national team.
Speaking of the national team, we do have one question from a Twitter follower. Do crew players still get paid by the team while they're away on national team duty?
Yes. I think they have certain windows.
I think it's right in the standard contract as
well. Yeah, they have certain windows during the season that are like FIFA call-up periods, and so they would get paid their weekly sum still throughout that
period.
And they'd
still get a bonus from the USA Soccer for being on team two, correct?
Yeah, and I would expect, I think it's fair to say that both of those guys should see playing time. I mean, I think Steffen, you bring him in with Bill Hamid, and I think Alex Bono was the other one. But I would say, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he played a half or the whole game. And Will, you know, I think showed his leadership in that January camp game against Bosnia and Herzegovina. So
he looked quite comfortable.
Yeah, and he was one of the better players on the field in a 0-0 draw. So, you know, I think if he can continue to build up those opportunities and play himself into bigger games down the road, that's a good sign for him as a 25-year-old.
And they are also the you know, some of the older guys on the team, too. The U.S. team is a pretty young team that they called up.
Right.
With experience.
You know, and it's hard to say how Will would fit in, you know, because the defensive midfield, you have Bradley's going to still be in the mix. Kellen Acosta is a very talented player. So where he mixes in, I don't know. But I think now is his chance to prove that he has the skills to play.
Training in Carson?
No, they're training in Cary, North Carolina, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's where they have the College Cup on occasion.
Right.
Yeah.
And Bradley's okay with that place? Because I don't want to, you know, if you're America, you don't want to tick him off, you know, or get his dander up about the places where he's playing, you know.
You just heard me like sigh uncomfortably, but yeah,
no, seriously,
no, it's not.
He's you know, he's Captain America.
It's not.
He's got the shaved head, and he's a wonderful midfielder.
It's not
been
the track.
He's been a great national team player, but as he gets a little older, I was surprised to find out last fall that he really looks down upon. But that's just me. I worry about
it's
him.
Not this.
I worry
not,
about
it's
him
not the same as the track that was covered in water in Trinidad and Tobago. So
boy, their field didn't look good on opening day. But that's another one. I worry about Michael. So that's the only reason I ask, Andrew. I worry very
Michael,
much.
Michael's got to look out for Michael's.
Has he proved his father's new stadium in L.A.?
What's that? Oh, Bank of California Stadium.
He likes that one?
It looks good on paper. I have no idea.
Makes his father proud.
Gosh.
Just
Twitter's asking. About to be blowing up with Toronto FC fans.
No, I just worry about him. He's a sensitive soul. Someone asked if there are any transfer targets for your Columbus Crew SC for Columbus.
Yes. Let me look up one real quick here. Yeah, one that came through, that there were a couple reports out of Argentina about a Newell's Old Boys player's name, Joaquin Torres, that the Crew was looking to sign him. Same agent, same team, obviously, is Milton Valenzuela, so there's some connection there.
He's been really good.
Hey, he's a stud, isn't he? 19 years old. That's impressive. He was the best player in the field, I think, on Saturday. So that's not a bad pickup, I would say. But, no, it, you know, I think there's rumors that they're looking at certain guys, but, you know, until a deal is struck, I wouldn't, you know, I don't think there's anybody that they have imminently coming. There's something that could happen down the road. As we've said on this podcast before, I think they're looking for a backup striker type person in addition to a winger, and I think they're going to need both of those pieces later on in the year.
Okay, let's move off the field now. Jeez, it was fun to start talking soccer when, you know, we got the pod up and running again, but still this looms over the city, this Exploration Austin,
and will continue to for months.
It's an ambitious thing, and I guess it's supposed to be respected here, respecting of the ambition. Do you respect the ambition, Kyle? Don't answer that. Okay.
I respect Kyle's ambition. You see his Kyle Snyder piece he did in the Dispatch?
Oh, that was sweet.
Yeah.
At K-Rob Photo, folks. It's a great follow.
Yeah.
So I'm sure everyone who listens to this podcast knows that, you know, it's been about, let's see, today's March the 21st. It's since October. What's that, five months?
5 months and 4 days.
5 months and 4 days. Wow. That's impressive.
And 4 hours. Not that anyone's counting.
So anyway, in that span, there's been it's been that span of time since Precourt proclaimed that he was exploring his options in Austin, and it's to get into the whole history. We've covered it on these podcasts. Go
still
back.
Still exploring.
Yes, it's sort of like Teddy Roosevelt on the River of Doubt at this point. The latest news this week, and we should cover it.
Yeah.
With, you know, we won't spend a year on it, but not surprising that PSV is retaining Bailey Cavalieri. That's a very powerful local firm, and they got to have one locally because the suit that was filed under the Modell Law, Ohio Revised Code 9.67, was filed here in Franklin County, so they need local
content. Yeah, and locally, I mean, that's an unpopular case to take. I mean, you know, that doesn't take a genius to know that, but
money talks.
Yeah.
Now, the flip side of that is, or the parallel path, I should say, would be that the city, which with the state is bringing suit, has retained outside counsel itself, and that is Bricker & Eckler, known as Bricker around here, another prominent law firm, and they're taking the case pro bono, which sort of streamlines, less red tape to cut through. To me, and I was sort of waiting for it because I'd been given a heads up that if the city and or the state retained outside counsel, it would be a sign that they're very serious about this litigation, and apparently they are. So good on Bricker for taking this pro bono, and good on the city for reaching out, you know.
Yeah.
And they'll pay a lot less than PSV is, and if any of my friends at Bailey Cavalieri are listening, I would get some, like, John Grisham, the firm, billable hours going here, you know? Did you get that? You didn't read the firm?
My mom likes John Grisham books, so I know.
Oh, what are you trying to say here?
No, she likes to read books.
Let's do, before we peel off, there's one question about this. Let's hit the question, and then Andrew, you can provide the happy or unhappy recap to the off-field situation. The question is, when are ownership offers for Columbus going to start rolling in? I think we've covered this territory by saying that it's our knowledge that there are very interested parties in Columbus, but that non-disclosure agreements are likely proliferating, so it's difficult to get much information on what prospective owners from Columbus, who they are.
Yeah, and as we reported on there, I mean, there was that offer and discussion on purchasing the team from the partnership early in this process, you know, before the announcement, obviously.
Right.
And that was not in the PSV response letter that was issued on Friday.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that's worth acknowledging as well. But I would ask you this, too, as a columnist who's been following this. If you are the Columbus partnership, if you are a wealthy business person in Columbus who is interested in keeping the team here, and there is a very serious offer down the road, at what point do you make that public? Do you give in to the pressure from the fans there that want to see that there is an effort being made? Or, you know, how public, how private are you with the acknowledgement of an offer there and with making an offer?
I'm not going to, this isn't dodging the question.
No, it's fine.
But I would say that there's some very smart people handling this thing in Columbus.
I would agree with you.
Columbus also has a history of unifying at high levels and getting things done. And so I can't say what the right way to do it is. I can only say that the smart people that are on top of this situation, I'm convinced they are on top of the situation, and I'm deferring to their judgment.
Right.
In this particular case.
Wow.
So, yeah. You know, and they've kept it on the down low, obviously.
Yeah, they have.
And I think there's reasons for that. I think there were some...
Yeah, as we discussed, there's some things that you can't discuss publicly. Yeah.
Well, that plus if you think about how this started as a shouting match between the city and PSV, and then the November 15th meeting that blew up in New York City, I think the city has, and when I say city, I mean Columbus Partners, interested parties in the city, the mayor, whoever else.
Powerful people in Columbus.
Yeah, the people who could get this done or make the arrangements, or even the people that could purchase all or half the team or whatever the goal could be. I think it's still more likely that the team moves.
I'd agree with that. Yeah.
But I think that the powers that be in Columbus have identified their one path, their parallel path, to succeed in getting the team to stay.
Yeah.
And part and parcel of it is, I don't want to say a back channel negotiation, but yeah, pretty much it's they're going to doing it on a down low rather than letting things blow
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, from everything we know, I would expect there to be a push before... You know, I would not expect it to go quietly into the night. You know what I mean? I think there would at least be an effort to that effect before a team would move.
Right.
And I think that's pretty fair to say.
Well, one thing we should ask you about the Austin situation is it seems pretty clear that it's good news for Columbus, generally speaking, if things are bogged down in Austin or are stalled or take longer than PSV wants them to take.
Yeah, and in a way.
And that is, in fact, what's happening now.
In a way. I think, so just to frame this conversation, Thursday, the city council will listen to and vote on a resolution asking the city manager to analyze and do stakeholder outreach for that McCalla Place site, which we've talked about in North Austin. I don't know how long that will take or how long it should take. The report back date so far on the resolution is June 1st, but you've already heard a couple council members, including Allison Alter, yesterday at their work session say that they need to do their due diligence. They need to ask questions about opportunity costs. You know, this was a site that was initially planned for affordable housing. You know, what are they losing by building a stadium there? What are they gaining? And so to do all of that analysis, it could take some time. And I think there are some council members, to your point, that are more interested in getting those full facts and figures and getting the full answer than abiding by PSV's timeline. So I'm curious in this discussion that's going to happen tomorrow, where the majority of the council lies in what they want to see as the timeline and how reluctant they are to move full speed ahead on this, because I think that will be a question that kind of frames this discussion.
There's also some transportation issues that have crept into the conversation
and who pays for the infrastructure. There's a rail stop that would potentially need to be moved to accommodate the stadium. You have access point issues. I mean, you're talking about a landlocked or a roadlocked piece of property that's not accessible from all sides. So I think you need to have a real serious conversation about planning of that site. And I think that would lead to some significant infrastructure costs.
So from the city's point of view, if you put it in that context of what's going on in Austin, it's like, okay, they have all this stuff going on down there. And I think that how do we get it done up here? And that's what they're doing as quietly as they can. And meanwhile, this lawsuit is inching forward, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
And the second part of the question was, when will the injunction be filed? Now, that's a question we can't answer right now because we haven't even got into court we don't even have a judge hearing motions to dismiss, you know,
right
before the thing even gets to court.
Exactly. I mean, Precourt Sports Ventures, mind you, just retained counsel on this in Columbus. So, I mean, this is not they don't have a full-fledged plan for how this will play out. But I imagine that, like you said, that the motion to dismiss would be the first thing, Your Honor.
So there's still a lot of moving parts. And as much as we'd all like to have this thing...
signed, sealed, delivered, either way, it's not going to happen.
No, I would say that it's good news for the Save the Crew movement that, and they've known that their feeling is that the longer this drags on, the better it is for Columbus, number one. And I'm talking about the Save the Crew people. And two, as soon as there is an injunction, that's a real wrench in the gears of PSV's plans to move to Austin.
Right. I think just to play devil's, just, you know, the other side of that coin is in Austin, you now have a site. You have a timeline, you have more or less city council support, and you don't have a ton of community opposition to that specific site. So I think they look at it as, if we're talking parallel paths here, you look at it, you know, they feel like they have their site and are not, don't have too many people fighting it. The timeline, as you said,
they're not even talking money yet down there.
Correct. And that, that is, so I would encourage anybody who's interested and who has 3 or 4 free hours tomorrow to listen to the Austin City Council live stream to see, you know, what the talking points are in this discussion. Because, you know, Allison Alter, as we mentioned, brought in a Stanford economist, a Stanford economics professor that, you know, he's written multiple papers and done a lot of research on stadiums not having much community benefit. And
right.
Not being a net positive. And, you know, she's saying, you know, we're going to present a letter on this. I'm curious to see how many council members are of that same mindset. I don't think, you know, as she even said, she's not in opposition to Major League Soccer, but I wonder how many council members.
It's the money.
Correct. Are weighing those opportunity costs. Yeah.
Any other ground we need to cover with MLS to ATX? Well, there was a plane flying over. Was it spring practice or something in Texas?
Yeah, UT spring practice. There was a pre-court. It was the second time that's happened.
It was the anti-pre-court sign.
Anti-pre-court sign. Yeah.
Flying behind a plane and over the University of Texas.
I think, you know, on another note, just a really terrible time in Austin, and glad that people are safe now.
Yes.
That's just a really, really terrible couple weeks there. So your heart goes out to people dealing with that situation.
I love that city, you know.
Yeah.
Anyone who's been there really has,
yeah, I have a couple friends who live down there, one who works for the Dallas Morning News and used to work for the Statesman, and another one who used to work for a paper there, and they loved it. So,
and except for Kyle, it's nothing personal. It's certainly nothing personal. And I guess that's it. Are there any other questions to kick around, Kyle?
I think we pretty much got them all.
Andrew, you want to mention our Facebook fan page again?
Yeah, we have over 650 members now on our Facebook page.
Great.
We've asked people to respond to discussions, and we post all our articles there, and some good conversation going there. So I think it's been a good resource for us. So if you are interested and you like following Crew News, feel free to join, and I'll probably approve you a few seconds after your request. So should be good.
So follow at KRobPhoto and at Andrew Erickson. Yep. I'm at Michael A Race 1 if you're interested. I do a lot of retweeting.
You do?
Yeah.
The retweeting.
Yeah.
RTs are endorsements.
Yeah. Well, I have an eye for it, you know.
Yeah, you do.
It's talent I need to plug. But, Andrew's really carrying the freight now that the Iowa State women's basketball season is over, and he's laser focused on the Crew as a beat now. And, you know, again, check out Save the Crew. There's a lot of wonderful Twitter people that are part of that movement. Among my favorites are Keith Noss and, of course, Morgan Hughes.
Who's Mr. Roast Beef.
Who's worth a chuckle, mm-hmm. you know. Timmy Myers has done a lot of wonderful work, and that's just a few. Yeah. But it really... it warms your heart to see the commitment these people have.
And I'm curious, we talked about it being 5 months. When this first happened in mid-October...
Well, you said 5 months, 4 days, and...
Correct.
4 hours, right?
A few hours.
Yeah. Come on, don't contradict yourself.
We got to be exact here. We're all about accuracy here at the Speakeasy. When you looked at, initially in mid-October when this first happened...
He almost lost his thought there, Kyle. Yeah.
I did that 2 podcasts ago. Did you think it would be this long when we would still not have a clear answer on what's happening?
I'll answer it this way.
Yeah.
I'll do Greg Berhalter. I understand what you're asking me, but I'll say this about that.
Yeah.
He's doing a great job, by the way, Greg Berhalter. Maybe we'll get to it on one of these programs. But I would answer it by saying that wouldn't you expect that they would have identified their second expansion city by now? That was supposed to come out in early December.
Couple rumors that's coming, but we'll see.
You know what? I thought it'd be done by now. And as someone who's a Columbus supporter and someone who sits in my chair, with my hat on as a columnist for the Columbus Dispatch, someone who who's
that's
part
right
part of his job, that's Union Street Tavern in Windsor, Connecticut.
Oh, nice.
part of my job is to be pro Columbus. You know, and especially in a situation like this, and. From that vantage point, it's good that this is dragging on. in my opinion. Not even in my opinion, a lot of people's opinion. It's good for the movement that this is dragging on and that their gears are grinding down there. Not saying it's not going to get done down there, but it is a positive thing for Save the Crew that things have gone at such a slow pace in Austin, and that, if I may be so frank to say, that they've done a terrible job down there trying to get this thing moved.
I think it's fair to say both you and I, when this happened in mid-October, and Kyle, you as well, I mean, I was not expecting it to us to still be having this conversation in, when is it now, March. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
5 months, 4 days, and 2 hours, you said.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, given that this report is going to take another 2 months, I mean, it's going to be longer.
And then you have the court case. So yes, that's another delaying move. And what it is the Modell law constitutional? It'd be fun to find out. It'd be fun to get an injunction, to get to discovery one and get an injunction two. Injunction is going to be a tough thing for them to handle. And that'd be a subject for a future edition of
Join Us Next Time,
the Soccer Speakeasy. For Kyle Robertson and Andrew Erickson, for the Podfather Patrick Flaherty, and Rachel Kilroy, who's behind the camera, I'm Mike Arias. Thanks for joining us, and Patrick, kick us out of here.